What does it mean? I mean, there's something that I've thought about since we started making this and that I've said. There's this thing I read that Jung said, that where love is absent, power fills the vacuum. And to me, that's what the show has always been about. And I don't think Jesse is offering any kind of prescription but that to me would have been the thing that could have helped and maybe even saved these people. And the vortex of power, which is drawing them all in, and which is drawing us in as a nation, is a clear and present danger.
Bling, bling. Bling, 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 bling. Bing, 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 bong, 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 bong. Welcome back to the analysis. Welcome back, guys. Welcome back, Greg Ott from New York, Mike Hammond from Denver, Colorado.
What's up?
Pleasure.
How accurate was my theme song?
That was the theme song?
That was the thing that bling, ding, 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 ding. I want to appreciate good theme songs and television shows. And that was one thing I wanted to start here was with just a little bit of appreciation. But today we're going to be talking about the season finale of Succession, the series finale of Succession. And it's all the rage. You know, if you haven't caught it, we're recording here on Memorial Day, Monday. And it's probably been meme spoiled for you if you haven't caught it already. But everyone's talking about it. And wanted to bring in Greg here. Greg, you're a great person to talk about this show with because you're a fan of dark comedy. But you work and have worked for a long time now in media and in the media landscape, sometimes maybe even conservative media. You've worked with politicians and people of power. So I was like, oh man, this is a perfect space for Greg to come in and give us his insight. And Mike's just a fan of the show. So, you know, he doesn't work with anybody special like that, but he texts with me a lot. So I thought he'd come in here and add color as well. But let's get it started here, guys. The show ended. A lot of people seem really positive about it. Do you guys think this was the best ending for the show? Feel free to spoil.
I can't imagine ending any other way. The whole show set up this family. Even the dad saying, you're not serious people from the get-go. He couldn't pick any of them. He didn't want any of them. He gave them all their due over and over and over again. They always fucked it up. And for them, for Shiv to Shiv in the very end and end up like selfishly getting it her way and probably destroying her relationship with the whole family. I think it was a perfect ending because the series promised you nothing else. And if it would have had a nice happy ending, I think people would have been pissed.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Bob, we were texting too about this. Is like the only other show like this with a final season to me was Breaking Bad, which I think is the best show it's ever been on television from the perspective of this last season was just every episode slowly you're getting to the end and it's not good the whole time. You could just feel the vibes of how it's going off a cliff. So I don't think there's any other way to end it. And there was just no fat in the show in general, but this season specifically, it was like every episode, they just kept moving, giving you enough. And then the hour and a half final episode was just like, it was almost like a movie and it felt like 45 minutes. Like it was just so riveting. I love the length of it too, how they executed that.
I'm impressed that they packed so much. Basically the entire series came down to the last 5 minutes of the entire series. The fact that like, yeah, you got to see him hang out again and maybe reconcile and scheme one last time, but like four seasons of work fell apart in the last 5 minutes. And I think that was just, that's great, just a great journey to go on with the entire show.
Yeah, we all have brothers. You guys have had that moment where you're so frustrated with your brother, you just grab him by the face, grab him by the inside of his face. And no. you pop his face with your hands. Yeah, I felt seen in that moment. But I had a lot going on emotionally with this show, and the show, you know, has it's a Shakespearean tragedy, right? And it's definitely inspired by King Lear, but you know, it has a lot of literary influences besides King Lear. But I just think I kept towards the end, I don't know if this happened to you guys, but I kept pausing to see how much time's left because I was like, there might still be a chance for Kendall to turn this around. I did like the last 20 minutes, I kept pausing and being like, oh no, he's only got 6 minutes. Oh no, he's only got 5 minutes. I don't know if that makes me weird or not, but I found myself pulling for Kendall, even though we know what happens in Lear, and the whole show, to your point, Greg, kept building to a point where none of these people were worthy of being the successor on this show. And, you know, Tom does really feel, when you take a wider look at it, Tom really does feel like the logical person to take over the CEO role. But I just felt so endeared to Kendall. I was pulling for him. Did you guys have any favorites, or did you guys have the same experience that I had in that space?
I mean, we've been watching Kendall. He was pretty much, you know, he's not the eldest, but he's treated as though he's the eldest.
I'm the oldest.
You watched him. Yeah. I mean, that's what you watched the entire series. He was the one that kind of, I don't know, you were rooting for him, rooting against him. You thought he threw it away. Then he came back. And I figured that, you know, it would come down to him and somebody else, but I couldn't see it. I knew he was the guy to watch. And so it was pretty much his story. And for it to end on him alone in a park. Yeah, that's pretty much how I saw the journey of the show. It's like, yeah, it's about the dad, but you're also following the dude who I think out of everyone probably has the best claim to the company, and yet watching him fuck it up over and over and over again.
Yeah, I wasn't rooting for one specific character really, but I think what I figured out maybe two thirds of the way into that finale, it's really the Roy family, those three versus everybody, and they could never figure it out. So it really isn't just Kendall, because Kendall needed Roman and Shiv, right? They always need each other to figure this out. And that's the show. They are incompetent. They're unserious people, and they couldn't figure it out. They never got on the same page. And that's what I mean. Watching that was just crazy to see how much they fell apart. I mean, they were like little kids fighting as like 5-year-olds in that conference room. That they were just back to that.
There was a lot of little kids moments, even in the kitchen where they're licking the cheese. And, you know, it definitely felt like, and it does show you these little glimpses of these used to be kids that would play together and have fun together. And you lose sight of that with all this corporate, you know, gray suit wearing, you know, politicking and everything. But yeah, they are at their core still a brother and sister. And Shiv could never get, and she says it there. She says, I hate you. She says something along, I'm paraphrasing, but like, I hate you in my gut. Like, I can't stomach you. And she could never get past that. And I think there's little moments that are so cool in the show, because I went back and watched different parts of it, you know, the last like half hour. And like, you see Kendall, he's always like glancing at that chair, especially after his dad died. And anytime he was back at Waystar, he's always like glancing into that office, and he finally gets to sit in the chair. And within the first like 3 minutes, he puts his feet up, and they like do a quick cut to Shiv, and she just like registers that. And she's like, oh, he's already out of control, and we haven't even done the fucking vote yet. You know, and then she knows that, and then he gets in that boardroom, and right before they go to the vote, he takes credit for the deal. He takes credit for the raise that they had in the deal. He's like, me and Rome brokered the deal, we killed it. And she's like, oh, here's like fucking example number two. And already, like, it's triggering her and all the things she hates about him. And to Greg's point, she has to go full Shiv. She's like, that's fucking too much. All the shake dumping on the head and the swimming around in the pool, or like, swimming around the lake, like, it was too fucking much for her. And like, they, people don't change. They're in this kind of what Jeremy Strong calls a doom loop.
Well, that's a good, I mean, the writing of the show, I mean, I'm not breaking news here. It's, there's really two ways to watch it. I mean, there's a lot of ways to watch it, but the pure character drama and dialogue in the show is just, it's like the best you're going to see from all these scenes where they're all the Roy people. And even like the council, Jerry, all them, they're all kind of like talking in this weird, like quippy kind of being dicks, but they're communicating the whole time about stuff. Like there's actually like, so it's like a subtext when they talk to each other. And so all that stuff you just said is so good, because you just get all this out of that, that they are still serious people, but they just don't know how to be serious people. Like they talk like little kids.
Greg, you're a political comedian, and you're always plugged in. Me and you used to be roommates, and you know, I always learned a lot from just the way you're able to consume politics and then find a humorous twist to it. Even the episode before, with the whole election and all that was happening there, what was your opinion on those? Did you have any particular fun observations?
No, it's pretty appropriate. I mean, I couldn't I think people take it away as pretty cynical. I think all the parallels to the, you know, 2016, 2020 election, you can draw those, but I think the reality is that's how these media companies work, the Fox News types and the other ones too. It's like, we want to give the audience what they want, what will be better for business in the long run. And these rich dudes have, you know, they can, Shiv is the one who claims to have the moral high ground, but at the end of the day, it's like, well, Kendall kind of makes peace of the fact, like, look, this Nazi will be good for business. So, all right, let's go with the Nazi. It's a pretty cynical reading of our politics and the way media works, but I think it's also pretty spot on. I mean, as you, I'm sure you'll get to it, but like all this stuff is based on the Murdochs.
Yeah.
Or at least a ton of it. And the, you know, they've got, you had Lachlan Murdoch, the oldest. I'm sorry, you had Lachlan, then you had James, who was kind of the Roman character, and then he's got a couple of daughters and then a million other kids from like these other marriages. But basically when Rupert dies, he's 93, 94, like he's not gonna, maybe his
it might mom, happen this year.
Yeah. It could, but I mean his mom also lived to like 105, so he could kick on forever and he sees no point in giving up his throne. But when he goes, the company, it's just like this. It's falling to the four kids who have the most like voting shares or whatever. And, you know, and the wife and some other people, but like the kids are going to be the ones controlling it. And thanks to all this like election stuff and like James Murdoch, he's certainly not a liberal, but he's, you know, believes in climate change and shit like that. And the latest speculation is, I think they're just going to try to sell the thing. So it's a very realistic mirror of like how this stuff is probably going to shake out. All the kids think they deserve the company. One kid is running it right now, but like when dad's gone, well, everybody's back in charge. They get a say in it. And everybody thinks, or at least the stuff I've been reading says, yep, it's probably going to be sold to some private equity firm. And that's a private equity firm. That's the end of it. So that's, yeah. So I think the cynicism and the reality of like, if a media company like this falls apart to a bunch of rich billionaires who, you know, only got the job because their dad was good at what he did. Yeah. It's pretty spot on.
You can't even, and it goes back to, they just, Mike, Greg, you tagged it at the top, but like all these different chances that they have to show their merit and to kind of prove, not just to Logan, who even was dead during the election episode, but just to themselves and to the other two, that they're worthy. They just keep falling on their face. And like that moment, and Mike, we were texting about it, they can't even get on the same page with the election shit. They're all over. It's just completely unraveling.
I'm not in the political sphere as much with like the media companies, but you know what I was saying before, with, I think the first way to watch the show is this character drama that's really well written, and you can just follow the characters, who's going to win this, what's going to happen. But the other thing is this larger, broader conversation on really the eat the rich stuff that's going on now, right? I mean, it's mainly in movies with Parasite, The Menu, Triangle of Sadness came out this year. But I think the medium of TV and using the Murdoch kind of cast system of like, this is how we're going to tell this story. And then they can just talk about just how crazy this sort of end stage capitalism is with these companies and people. And who are these people? Like what's going on with these acquisitions? I mean, it's like, and so to go that route with it and then to kind of show the power structure of how people around that behave, I mean, just a genius way to tell that story. So I think TV is the best medium for this whole eat the rich thing. That's what this show did such a good job at. It's kind of showing you why we're in where we're at with this stuff.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, Jesse Armstrong, who helped create the thing, he's had his finger in so many different like pies, like he working on Veep and like In the Loop, like all that old stuff that's very of these like people very close to the centers of power. I think he's got a very, very keen ear for this type of person and this type of, it's not just wealthy people, it's wealthy people with power who don't quite have a purpose to wanting power other than wanting power. It's a very cynical and very empty way of looking at these people that I also think is pretty accurate. It's like I'm a pretty cynical fuck when it comes to, you know, looking at rich people doing whatever they want. Seeing, I live in New York, seeing all these sailboats going around, it's like, come on, it's like you can't even pay your rent here. And I think him being so close to that real, the people who want these jobs like that, and being able to exploit them in this like Shakespearean way is what was so satisfying about it. It taps into the politics and the culture of right now, which is people do have that eat the rich mentality, but also like seeing these like nobodies control an election is pretty, kind of true. It's like when Fox called Arizona for Trump, all those morons lost their shit. And it was like, oh, we're going to make an even crazier news network to talk to you. It's like, they really do pull a bunch of levers that have everybody's attention, and seeing how cynical these people can be is very appealing to me.
I like the thought of that slow pan Kendall looking out at the waves. It feels almost like he's about to climb over the railing and just kill himself right there. He says he's a cog, and he if I don't get this gig, I'm going to die. And just like doing another slow pan just to the next bench, and it's Greg shaking his fists at the sailboats out on the water. I just think that would be a perfect ending. Greg shaking his fist.
But this Greg, yes.
The other Greg, Greg Ott. But there's a lot of water themes as well. You know, you get Kendall in one of the early seasons kind of floating in the pool. It looks like he's contemplating drowning himself, and then he's kind of floating on the dock at the end. He's staring out at the water. There's all this kind of water allegory happening all the time. But speaking of just where the company ends up going to, I fucking thought Alexander Skarsgård was awesome as Mattson in this. And it's just like constantly creating chaos. And that scene in the final episode between him and Greg, between him and Tom, where he's testing basically Tom's ability to be a pain sponge, and he's telling him he's going to fuck his wife. And just was like, yeah, well, you know, we're all men, you know, it's just like Tom will do just anything to get where he needs to be. I thought that scene was incredible. I thought that was probably my top favorite scene that wasn't Logan Roy based in the whole show.
Yeah, I think he's supposed to represent like a Peter Thiel, sort of like these like really ruthless, terrible tech people who.
Oh, I got what's his name? Tesla. I got.
He's like
Elon.
Elon.
Well, yeah, well, but Peter Thiel is cut from that same cloth. I mean, they're both from the PayPal Mafia. That's what their douchebag group in the 90s was called.
Yeah. Well, but this is all like the Daniel Plainview, There Will Be Blood stuff. Of
I don't want anyone people, else to succeed.
Yeah, they wanted the money is whatever. I mean, the money is the power, but they want to destroy people. They want to like ruin people that try to beat them at things. And Bob, to your point, I thought he was every scene he was in was so like awkward and off. It was like, what's happening? Kind of like what? And then you kind of put it together at the end. But to add that element in too, right? I mean, and they even allude to it, right? His assistant or somebody says he didn't even do any of this stuff, right? Like he got the code from somebody else. And it's like, that's what's happening too, right? There's a lot of really ruthless people in tech who they have that persona. They're not like problem solvers or vision people. They just win. They're like, they will do anything. So, I mean, adding that, it just makes it so much more of a modern story, right? Because the Fox News thing is kind of an older business model, and the Gojo thing is what everything is now.
Well, it's the billionaire types like Musk or Peter Thiel or Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey. It's any of these guys who was able to ride this wave, and they get so successful, nobody ever tells them no. Because they have enough money to do whatever they want. And this guy was a perfect embodiment of like, guy knows nothing about broadcast, guy knows nothing about radio, guy knows nothing about theme parks, but he knows the apps and the media are all coming together. And I didn't see him as like just wanting to like fuck people over. I saw it as more like he doesn't care. It's like he's like Zuckerberg's like whole like move fast and break things. Like, I don't care. I already know what I'm talking about, and I'm just gonna do this and worry about the consequences later. And I think that's what made it so such a good ending for like the story. It's like Logan Roy has made his whole career out of like making this huge media company and making money hand over fist. It's always like, how do I make more money? How do I grow? How do I make more money? I'm dying. Well, I'll give it to some guy who's just going to try to make a bunch of money out of it. Like, it seems like a natural progression of like, oh yeah, the wind's blown in a different direction. Tech is owning all the media. I'll sell it to a tech company. Seems like a good match, and I'll come out with a fortune. So that's sort of like, The dude's performance is great, but I think it was a lot of like truly embodying these tech guys who just think they're better than everybody and don't give a shit about the consequences.
Yeah, I listened to an interview with Alexander Skarsgård on it, and he was talking about the core of the character being so disappointed when Logan dies, because he's really just kind of bored.
And this, it was like a boxing match, you know, and he's like, he's got this great adversary and he's excited to take down Logan Roy. And even if he wins the deal by $5 or $5 billion, like, I want to take down this dude, this Titan. And then he dies and he gets the shitty kids. And it's like, he's just like mousing with them. He's just fucking bored.
Well, look at like Zuckerberg. It's like that dude built Facebook because he came up with like Hot or Not or whatever. Then all he did for the rest of his career is acquire a bunch of shit. He bought WhatsApp, he bought Instagram, blah, blah, blah. Then they try to make this VR shit that nobody wants to use because it's very stupid. And what is he doing? He has to go back and like, all right, well, how do I rip off TikTok? And how do I, it's like, he to me is the perfect like parallel. Like, dude had one good idea, made a bunch of money, people listen to him. And now he's just photocopying everything.
Yeah, I love that scene too, where it's really the only scene where he loses his shit. It's kind of right after he figures out the Roy family's getting together on this stuff. And like, he runs to the room. He's like, our phones, I want to see phones. Man,
fucking zombies.
Phones. Yeah. And that's where he like kind of snaps. And that's what I think for me, where he's like, I have to win this. I have to win. He doesn't need it, but he's like, I have to win now. I have to win this. So he like kind of snaps. And it's just so well done how they showed him in that scene to me, because it kind of encapsulates like what you're talking about. These like maniacal guys that have to get everything they want.
Talking about the little moments. And, you know, I think it's pretty clear towards the end that he never planned to have Shiv Roy as his American CEO for Mencken, but he was just going to leverage her. But I don't think he actually had decided to go with Tom. I think that was kind of a late minute turn. And there's a moment at the funeral where Shiv is talking to Roman in front of Mattson, and she's in there like, Shiv's talking to Greg, excuse me. And she's like, where's Tom? And he's like, he's still working. Like, he's still locked in over at ATN. And there's a moment where you see Mattson kind of like register that. And it's like that committed loyalty to his work. He's like he's dutiful, and he starts to put the pieces together. And I think the cartoon in the final episode was a big motivator as well, where he keeps saying that the political cartoon doesn't impact him, but it really does for his ego. And he's like, I need a guy who's just going to be the face of the organization, but I still need to be able to manipulate him and push him wherever I need. And that really goes to show you, Tom made every single micro move, and there was a lot of big moves that were made throughout the course of the four seasons that were kind of swinging favor to different people for the CEO, but Tom just kept consistently setting himself up in that place. And when you finally see the whole picture, you're like, oh my God, fucking genius.
I've seen speculation where it's like, oh, when they're talking about how he'd let Mattson like fuck his wife at that dinner, when they're like talking about like, do you want the job or not? To me, that wasn't the ruthlessness. It's like Tom stabbed him all in the back at the end of season three. He was like willing to go. He sold everybody out. And so it was like, I didn't see it as like, man, this guy will bend over for anybody. He's like, this dude has been making moves the entire show. And it's in a very like savvy, unassuming way, because he does have that little, you know, stupid charm to himself that makes it seem like he wouldn't do it, but he's, you know, just as dark. And that monologue earlier in the season where he was like, all I care about is money, man. I got money now. I want it. I want more money. It's like, this dude knows exactly what he wants. He's had a taste of it, and he's the one trying to earn it for himself, whereas everybody has been had it their whole lives, you know? He's got more on the line.
Right, right. Because what you learn through four seasons is, and Bob, we were texting a little bit about this, like, you don't really get that much exposition in anyone's actual job, like, at the company, like, what they're doing every day. I mean, Tom, you do to some degree, but the game is what Tom does. It's the scheming, the politicking, the leverage, and it's changing every day. And Tom was the best at that, right? Which is why he ended up coming out on top. And it couldn't be more opposite, especially for Kendall and what he was trying to do. So, you know, I do think that's also a commentary on like, these are the people that acquire power in this country, massive institutions and corporations, the people that will say and do anything, that don't have any
soulless belief, morally soulless. Bankrupt,
they just want access to power. What do I have to do or say? Which, I mean, Tom, even after when Mattson gets up and gets shots and Greg comes over and they're at the restaurant and he had just told him that he's going to be CEO. I think even Tom is like a little off edge a little bit, because he's like, man, I'm going to get this job, but like, this is going to be terrible. Like, I'm going to, even for me, I'm going to have to be a caricature of a human being for this, but I'm going to do it. So you just get that whole breakdown of how Tom is. He'll just do it. And that's it.
I did like the moment at the end with, well, you have the bathroom fight, which was just a nice little respite in the middle of a very intense hour. But then the sticker on the forehead, I was like, it was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, because I thought that whole scene was set up to give you the last moment of the kids getting along before the boardroom, where they're watching their dad's video and they're all kind of crying or having different emotional responses. And I'm like, okay, that was what the point of this scene was. But then no, you get like one little callback with the fucking claim sticker. I was like, that is so nice. Would you rank this in a top 10 favorite shows of all time, a top 5? Like, what do you guys think the legacy of the show is going to be?
Definitely a top HBO show. I think the fact they stuck the landing and it was short, as in they knew the story they wanted to tell and they pretty much told it in a succinct and yet not, I didn't feel like it was overdrawn. Like, I don't think it like was drawn out too long. I saw people complaining, it's the same. Every season's the same. It's like,
oh, it's Hayes. That's why.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you saw different variations on the same theme, but that's why we're watching the show in the first place. I think it'll take some time. You know, Hammond said Breaking Bad remains one of his favorite shows. That to me is a show that, no, I didn't watch Better Call Saul, so I don't know if that's changed anybody's perception of Breaking Bad, but I think that show has aged not so well, because I think the style is very, very 2000s, and it's almost like watching Cheers to me. Like, it has that, like, there's a real distinct, like, time period I'm living in here, and a real distinct, like, directing style, real distinct peak TV style. I mean, the acting is still incredible, the writing is still great, but I think it feels more like a time capsule show than like, wow, this is the best storytelling of all time. Even though I still think it's still a very well-told story, but I think this is going to be up there with like Sopranos and stuff, of like all-time HBO shows and possibly all-time TV shows, compared to Breaking Bad, which is like, this is an excellent show, but maybe I think it was so swept up in that time period that maybe it's not as excellent as this will hold up to be in the long run. Okay. I think that's not an opinion everybody will have. So that's just
my I'm team Breaking Bad for sure, but that's okay. Go ahead, Ham.
Yeah, no, well, it's interesting, because I think maybe a big learning experience for me, because I have this show, this is like one of the 5 best shows I think I've ever watched. And I think for me, what's happened so much with TV is there's always a bad season. There's always a bad 2 seasons of a show. It's never... like, you got me, I'm watching. Like, only Breaking Bad and Succession have really done that, where it's this really tight show where they knew what they wanted to do and you see it progress through. So I think that's just something I really like. So I think for me, it's going to be kind of an all-time show. And I think to Greg's point, which is true, the 4 seasons, you know, like, my wife hasn't watched it. We'll just fire this up and watch it, right? In the winter, like, people can watch this show. It's not like like even Mad Men or something. It's like 7 seasons of hour-long episodes. It's like such an investment. Game of Thrones, like this, I think this will, the staying power of this will be pretty good, I think. Because if you didn't watch it, everyone's going to tell you to watch it. You can watch it kind of fast. And then I think a lot of these themes are just going to be more and more true, right? Throughout the years here coming up, what they're examining. So I can expect some clones of this too coming out. I think other people are going to try to rip it off for sure.
Well, I think you're talking about themes, and we've been talking a lot about the grand themes around politics and media and things. So I think what's going to make this show potentially rewatchable is the relationships with the characters, and, you know, the specificity of the family element. And so if you've ever had a daddy issues, this is a great show for you to unpack or maybe reflect on. And I think, yeah, just the relationship of these siblings, and, you know, it's really a lot of lives born out of trauma. And I think, you know, they just, them interacting with each other and the power of the performances in that space, just the personal elements of it, I think are really great. You know, it's going to be hard for me to think I'll be as invested. I mean, my heart was pounding for that boardroom vote at the end there. And as that scene was melting down and they're fighting in the adjacent boardroom, it was like really gripping television. I don't know if I'll feel the same way that I've maybe felt in rewatches from other shows, but I do think the family element would be something to revisit.
Yeah, I've read a lot about people talking about the trauma and what the dad put them through and all that. I see it more through the lens of like, I have two younger brothers, mm-hmm. and I could see myself being the Kendall, being like, I'm the oldest. Of course I get this. This is dad promised it to me. What are you talking about? Even though he's not the oldest, he's the real, you know, in mm-hmm. the scheme of the three of them. But I found that to be a very convincing relationship of three siblings bickering all the time. And like, how could they do this? How could they do this? Because they remember, like, there was that monologue or whatever the scene was, like at ATN, when they were talking about how I think it was Kendall, how he couldn't lie or something because of the rain, or how Shiv was a bad liar. It's like the spill of the mm-hmm. chocolate milk in the Range Rover or whatever. It's like, yeah. You have all those little memories. And like, that's just really sharp. That's a really sharp sibling relationship that I think doesn't often get, I can't think of a better show with three very distinct siblings who are just like, who capture that so well, even though they look nothing alike.
How are Shiv and Kendall from the same? But yeah, go ahead, Mike.
What you guys are saying is it's like oddly relatable. Really is. I mean, anyone that has a family or a brother or a sibling, you can watch the show and understand it that way. And then I also think there's a very American, like, you know, you want to be the Rorys and be like a billionaire. It's like, do you? Like, yeah. It's like,
well, this Kendall kind says of a terrible that to, life. To Roman, he says, do you even want it, when they're at the pool right. and they're doing that final triangle showdown where it's like, do you even want this year? And you know, there's always this conversation, and Kendall's told at different points, like, you're not your father, which is a good thing. You're actually a good person and you're not morally bankrupt. Yeah. And they have pieces of their father in them, but they never had all of what it took to all of the evil that it took to pull it off. But,
no, so I was just going to say, they don't need money. So it's really mm-hmm. strange. Like, they're in a world where the validation of themselves and their life is this role they're going to move into, or this company, but it's not really attached to anything else because they have everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's a really strange dichotomy.
The tragedy is that they are selling a company that will make them individually even more billions of dollars. Like, the deal going right. through benefits them because they sell their shares and they make a fortune. So it's like, they're all, you know, miserable, but it's like, all right, well, it's too bad. Like, yeah. I know, like, this is what you built your life around. I get into arguments all the time around this stuff of, like, you know, there are wealth therapists, and they're like, there's a whole industry of, you know, when you have that kind of money, you don't think you have real friends, and you think people are taking advantage of you, and you don't quite, it's hard to separate reality from not reality. And I've heard arguments over, like, oh, you know, it's those are rich people have different problems. It's like, they do. I'll take those problems any day of the week. I will happily trade. Give me the helicopter. Give me the nice meal.
Jordan Belfort. I've been rich and I've been poor. I choose rich every time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that world. So it's like, these people, yeah, they're upset. Oh, well, they still have the apartment overlooking.
He's going to kill himself in that.
That's what I was just going to ask. Hudson. What do you think happens to all the characters?
Well, so, Roman's happy. Roman's free. Right. I think he's the one that comes out the least scathed, and I think he was the best person of the three of them. He's
like, come to peace with his life, really.
Yeah, he's going to take his millions, and he's going to go and have, like, all sorts of dungeon sex. I think Shiv is still plotting to find ways around Tom, or I think they're going to live in a loveless marriage for a while and have a kid and try to... She's going to try to show that she's playing the part, and I think she's always scheming. And I think Kendall's going to kill himself.
I think those last shots of each of those characters was exactly what they're going to do. Kendall is going to be aimless and wander by himself, whether he lives or dies. It's like, whatever it is, it's aimless. Roman is satisfied, whatever you mean, whatever that means. And and Shiv is just gonna scheme into her own family. that's the darkest of the three. Like, she's gonna drill that, these people down even worse. It's like, she's the worst.
Yeah,
I've seen those who's the worst character on Succession, blah blah. It's like, I think it's her far and away. I think she's 100%. The 100%. Most ruthless of the bunch. as evident in this episode especially, but yeah, throughout.
I think a recurring theme of the show is just Shiv kind of ruining everything. Really, it's like, make a decision, Shiv. Are you gonna screw it over? Or are you gonna screw over your husband? Do you want to marry? You want to be with your husband? Do you not? Like, she never
commits. She couldn't even commit to her marriage. Yeah.
No, she's just aimlessly wandering around and has no idea what she's doing. And that's why Kendall, I mean, Bob, to your point, I got why he was so pissed in the conference room at the end there. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, what, dude, he's like Icarus. He gets so fucking close. And then he's in the chair and then they take it away from him. He's like,
he's going to do this to me right now. Yeah. I mean, you just cannot. She is such a wild card in the worst way possible in all these situations.
I think
she's the worst for sure.
For sure. And I think what's the most tragic of all this is it's such short term thinking. Like her scuttling this deal, like literally as they're voting. It's like, all right, you're doing what you think is right in the moment. And then imagine you fast forward another 6 months. Like, maybe Kendall is dead. Like, was this worth it? Like, it's such a, like, you guys have put so much thought into this. And then at the last minute, you change your mind again. It's like, again, it's like they just see only what's in front of them and not with no sense of, like, what's coming down the pike.
And it's just, it really was a culmination of just, you know, a lifetime of jealousy and envy and animosity, and like they just could never stand to see one of the other, you know, and they all had different ways of expressing it, but it's like that types of toxicity. I believe we all have more loving families than this, but you do have that, you see that sibling rivalry, you know.
So. Well, again, that's Tom, right? Tom doesn't have any of that. Tom's like, I'm here, like, you know, like Greg said, I want to be rich, I want to run this. What's he from, Missouri or Minnesota or something?
He's Minnesota.
Like, yeah, so to him, it's like, he must be thinking, these guys are idiots. Like, they can't even figure this out. And I'm just going to come in here and figure it out. And that's what I'm excited on the rewatch, to just pay attention to Tom in every scene. The next time I have to watch it, because I really do think a lot of this stuff goes back even to like the first and second season. He's aware of this and aware that he can get this. He doesn't know how it's going to happen, but that's the big difference between him and the Roys. It's like, he doesn't have all that crazy baggage and stuff that he has to deal with.
They had their chance, man. They had their chance to break it. They had the 100 going on. They bought Pierce. Like, they really had a chance to make their own way. And then they just defaulted to what they thought they were supposed to do. And that was goes back to the line of this. There's like two lines that kind of encapsulate the entire show, which was, you're not serious people. And this is all bullshit. We're all bullshit, you know. Yeah. And I think that's like that's the show. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I'm gonna miss it. I like having a I was just telling my wife, Christy, that, you know, I've seen these trailers for The Idol, this like weekend show with like Johnny Depp's daughter. It is supposed to be just pure dog shit. Like all these like production stories about how they were to rewrite the entire thing. How The Weeknd is a terrible actor. You know, I remember when the trailer for the show came out, I was like, do we need another Billions? Do we need another rich person show? Blah, blah, blah. But I think cynical portrayals like this are such a reflection of where we are right now. And I think the bubble they lived in was a very watching. I live in Brooklyn, but I can see the helicopters, the Uber helicopters that go from like lower Manhattan that shuttle you over to the airport because you couldn't possibly wait in traffic. Like, I see that stuff take off all the time. And so seeing these people having what is relatively a petty fight as they're in these beautiful glass buildings in beautiful cars, never having to wear a coat. It was a really intriguing portrayal that I think took really sharp writing and really sharp performances, and it took a really sharp execution to get right, that I'm not seeing in like whatever this Idol show is. And so that's a long way of saying, like, I hope there's HBO is always going to HBO, but, you know, I feel like Apple is actually putting out the stuff that I'm like, man, that was pretty interesting. Like a Severance type show that,
oh yeah,
it's really, definitely. You really just need I worry that HBO, you know, is not going to have the same output, but then again, I've said that before, and then Succession comes along and blows me away. So I'm going to miss it.
Same. I mean, my big thing is just the quality that you could count on. When you put on a Sunday, you put on an episode. I mean, the writing is just, it's incredible how well written, the dialogue, everything is so interesting to watch. And that's why I was so excited for this season. Like, God, I hope they stick this, because this is so cool how they're doing this. And so not to have that kind of quality to go back to, that's always what I look for in a lot of these shows, right? Just like seeing great things. And so it's a bummer that it's gone in that regard. I'm interested to know what some of these people's careers look like too, because after this, I mean, Matthew McFadden, that's his name, right?
He's been around for a while. He was right, in like Pride and Prejudice,
movies,
like,
and he's in The Notebook, and but like some of these people, like, I mean, everyone's so good on the show. It's like tremendous.
Well, like Frank popped up in the last season of the Miss Maisel show, and it's like he's still playing like a suit and tie, like a Johnny Carson equivalent, totally different character, you know, but still has that like business look. But it's like, we'll see him and Carl pop up in those types of roles. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I agree. It'll be interesting to see where, like, I don't know what Sarah Snook is going to do, but who knows? Yeah. I mean, these people have no problem finding interesting jobs.
Right. Yeah,
Jimmy Strong's going to Broadway. Yeah. And there was a cool thing. There was a cool interview that Jeremy Strong was saying. He improvised walking back into that boardroom in the last episode, and Frank was given the line. It wasn't in the show, but when he was like, so what do we do? We're going to reset. And he says, you lost. It's 7-6. You lost. You don't have it. And there was another line that they tagged in there that he improvised, which was, you never had it. And it was like this entire show, like, you never had it. And Jeremy was like, I kind of wish they would have kept that in there, because he was like, when I heard it, just as the actor living the part, he was like, it leveled me. I was like, what an amazing piece of just improv there that he kicked in there. So, I mean, all the actors on the show, that's to say, they all are going to find a place somewhere else. Sarah Snook, to me, seems like she might have a similar type trajectory in terms of getting television opportunities as the Mad Men girl, Peggy.
No, but it took a Handmaid's Tale thing to break her out of that. Like, I think it's going to take for each of these guys. Like, I'm only going to see, you know, I saw on some off-Broadway show, the guy who plays Greg, I saw him in some play, some, like, I don't know, Tennessee Williams play or something. I didn't even know he was in it. I didn't know his name at the time. He walks out, I'm like, oh, the Greg guy is here. And he was playing a character identical to Greg. So it's like, it will take a thing. Yeah. You know, to take some of these guys. Other than Jeremy Strong is, you know, a crazy method guy who will, I'm sure,
do all sorts of. Yeah, he was already in the Chicago 7 movie, and he'll be doing movies and stuff for a while. So anyway,
what was that recent movie that had a terrible title, like Armageddon Time?
Oh yeah, Armageddon Time. I didn't even bother. Oh, he's in that. Okay, that is a terrible title. But with that said, thank you guys for coming on. I'll miss the show as well. And, you know, it was made for a very stressful Sunday evening of television with Barry coming right after that. So it was a fun ride for both of those shows. We'll be back to talk about Barry later. But thank you, audience, for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And, or Greg, what's the other way to say it instead of like and subscribe? What are you supposed to say?
You want to hit that bell? Are you on YouTube? I think it's just audio, right?
Never mind.
Seriously, if you're on audio, well, on Apple Podcasts, I think you follow now.
Okay.
And you subscribe on Spotify, and then there's all those other weird apps that if you're using, I don't know, all those, so many stupid apps, so many different buttons. Figure it out.
Hit the buttons on the stupid apps, and we appreciate you guys. We'll see you down the road. Bye.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye.